We about to check this one right. We about to do this with all the kids, the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters. You know, the regular people.
Hello and welcome to The Everything Project with me, Kelly Ford, aka Book of Mum, and Nat Stalmy Sunday.
Hello, welcome. Kelly, what episode is this? I've lost track now. Have you?
I have. It's episode great.
Yeah.
So we are going to be introducing our topic shortly. However, I just want to flag, if you are listening to this on Soho Radio or Mixcloud, you'll be hearing the tracks in their full glory. But if you're listening on Audio Boom or the iTunes, the tracks are shortened for rights reasons. So sorry about that, guys. Today, we are tackling a very serious subject of child sexual abuse. I just want to flag at the top of the show that this is an incredibly large subject and we are going to do our very, very best to handle it as sensitively as possible. We'll be speaking to victims of sexual abuse and we'll be speaking to a professional from NAPAC also. Nat is going to introduce our guest shortly. But we just want to flag, if after this show you need to talk to someone about the experiences you have gone through or are currently experiencing, we'll be detailing at the end of the show the right people to talk to or the right channels to point you towards. Our aim is to approach this subject with complete sensitivity. So, Nat, who's joining us today?
So, today we've got Gabriel from NAPAC, from the National Association for People Abused in Childhood. And we've also got Sarah here, who is going to tell us about her experience. And we've got Nina, too, who's going to talk to us a little bit later about your experience. Now, obviously, this is a difficult topic for you guys to tackle with us here today. And I really appreciate you being here because I think it's really important to talk about something that clearly affects a large portion of the population and it's often not spoken about. So, you know, hopefully by us speaking about it today will help others to know that they're not alone and let's discuss it.
Most sexual abuse is not reported, detected or prosecuted, and 9% of adults have experienced psychological abuse and 7% physical and sexual assault. More than 1 in 10 girls and 3% of boys have been sexually assaulted in childhood.
That's probably vastly underrated. No, not what's the word?
Underreported.
Underreported as well. Right, so Sarah, can we come to you first?
Yes.
As we've discussed, you know, if there's anything you feel uncomfortable with or you don't want to talk about, you feel free to stop at any time. You're in complete control here. But in your own words, can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you?
Yeah, so I guess before I start, I wanted to say, I don't know whether other people who might be listening might feel this, but my abuse was child-on-child abuse.
Yeah.
So my abuse was only 2 years older than me.
Right.
And I've always found it really tricky being able to feel like I'm allowed to say I was abused.
Yeah.
Which sounds really weird. I think when you have been abused by another child, you kind of think, when you meet someone who's been abused by an adult, you think, oh God, you know, my abuse must be so much less worse than yours, or I feel like I shouldn't be here talking about it because I don't have the right to sort of... So it's really weird, but
yeah.
That's the first sort of thing that came up when we talked about me coming on the show.
Absolutely. But it's really important because I think, you know, child-on-child abuse is a... You know, it's out there and many people experience it. So I really appreciate having your perspective on this episode.
So I was well, my mum and I were living in with another family at the time. My mum was a living nanny at the time. My dad had gone when I was 6 months old, so it was just two of us. So I had a really great, lovely, amazing relationship with my mum. We had a fab time. And then when we were seven, I went to live with her, with another family. And there were two children there. So my abuser was the youngest child from that family. It was mainly, I say, we were there for about 2 years. It was the last sort of probably half a year that I was there. He'd always been a bit of a bully, quite manipulative. You know, sometimes he'd be really nice, sometimes he was horrible. We had a weird relationship where when we'd lived in two houses with them. So the first house I shared a room with his sister. When we moved, it was a huge, big old Tudor house. So we ended up on the top floor, the two of us, on our own together. And I think a lot of what he did was premeditated. I didn't really think about it at the time. Started off with a lot of bullying. He used to bully me, so make me steal money from his dad so he could go buy sweets after school because he's 10. We were both kids. It's really, that's where it's hard to sort of get your head around it sometimes.
Yeah.
This moved on to me stealing porn magazine pages from his dad's room. I mean, I don't know how he knew. Obviously, he'd been snooping around in there. Mm. He used to get me to go and steal porn magazine pages from his dad's room. I got caught doing all of this.
So, and then you got in trouble for that.
Oh, God, yeah. I got caught stealing money. I got caught with porn magazine pages in my room, aged 8, and, like, hauled out in front of the whole family.
Oh, man.
You know, oh, you don't even need to look at this. You know what it is. And he'd always be there. I don't know why.
In the background.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Don't even think about telling on me.
Mm.
So this happened, and then the porn magazines happened, and I guess he didn't even think about it till I was like 20 in counselling, that he obviously would have been taking those magazines to masturbate to.
Mm.
So a little while after that, I guess, he obviously decided that he'd rather experience that on a person.
Mm.
So I really honestly couldn't tell you how many times it happened because I mean... maybe 5 or 6 times or for a period of a couple of months. Started off with lots of, we'd have to pretend we were at the cinema and he'd stop trying to kiss, like make me snog him and stuff. And then it moved on to, I don't know where he found it. He found like a dressing up, like a sexy waitress outfit somewhere.
Right.
So he used to dress me up in that. And then basically, I guess he was posing me, as I realised very much later on, in the same way as the images from the porn magazines that he'd been getting me to steal for him.
Right.
Then that went to performing oral sex and stuff on me. He never tried to have sex with me. I guess, I think the stupid thing is, because he was so young anyway, because there wasn't sex depicted in the porn magazines, I guess it didn't occur to him to take it to that stage.
Mm.
So this happened a few times, culminated in one experience. So I'd say probably getting caught with the magazines was the worst thing, probably almost worse than what happened.
Yeah.
And then this is the bizarrest thing, that after the last time when he performed oral sex with me again, he had a friend round. I don't remember when, a couple of weeks later or something. They didn't do anything to me, but they stopped me in the corridor upstairs, like sniggering, really obviously amusing themselves. I think he'd obviously been telling his friend about what happened. And I just, this was almost like the worst thing, that they just came up to me, sort of cornered me, and his friend just looked at me and was like, I know what you did.
Oh, gosh.
Not, I know what he did to you, or I know what you did together.
Mm.
I know what you did. And the two of them were like sniggering and laughing about it. And I think that's when the penny dropped for me. About everything, that I'd done this awful thing.
Right.
And for me, nothing else ever happened again after that. But for me, that was the moment when I became, in my head, a worthless, disgusting, if you can feel like a whore aged 8 when you don't really know what sex is, that was like the nail in the coffin
for me. The shamefulness.
Oh, God, yeah. I felt sick.
Mm.
And I think a few weeks after that, I don't really remember how long it was. I must have said to my mum, I don't want to live here anymore. And so my mum was seeing my stepdad at the time, thank God, he's lovely. So we were about to move out, I think, anyway. And I think me saying, I don't want to be here. But I remember his sister coming up to me afterwards, my mum was obviously told them we were leaving, and she was so fond of her. And she was like, "What did we ever do to you?"
Oh.
And obviously Matthew's there with her,
yeah. And you have all this dialogue in your head, yeah, of everything.
Like, oh my god,
what didn't you do?
I can't tell anyone, oh. And I've just been in this awful, you know, as far as everyone else in the house is concerned, I'm a thieving,
yeah,
weird, porn stealing, weird kid.
You'd been labelled as this, yeah, problem child.
So,
but also, yeah, that must have been so difficult, because actually it was your mum's job, and you probably had this guilt associated with you disreputing your mum.
Oh yeah, it was just really hard, because I mean, thank God for me, school was amazing, but I went home and got bullied. So,
yeah,
and when you're with your bully all the time, and they're always watching you, and they're always with you, and they're always there, I mean, God knows why nobody, like, it's the only thing I'm really angry about is how nobody sort of said to me on my own, why is this happening? Why are you stealing, yeah, stuff? Why have you got these? Why it had to be a whole family experience has always really bemused me, because I never felt like I was given
a chance
or a space to tell the truth. But also what made me really angry was, a few years later, I was talking to my mum about it, because my mum knows all about it.
At what age was that? Were you able to confide in your mum about what happened?
I think when I started explaining some of it to her when I was 12 or 13, I think, because we'd moved out. And I think my mum made a joke once about the whole porn magazine thing, and I just lost my shit.
Oh,
gosh. And was like, don't you fucking dare ever laugh about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was horrified.
But you'd carried it for 4 years as,
yeah,
well.
And I don't think, the weird thing is as well, you know, these like realisations happen to you as you're getting older. And I said to my mum a while back, why did you let me lie about it? Because I said, the father must have known. I mean, like an 8-year-old tearing pages out of porn magazines is not going to leave a beautiful, you know, probably just, yeah, was freaking out that I was having to go in there and do it in the first place. So we're just ripping these things out. I said, did this dad not say to you? Because I'd said, oh, I found them in a field. I was, yeah, going to throw them away or whatever, yeah, you do. And they were like, okay, fine. I said, he knew that they were from his room. Why did you both let me lie? She said, he never told me that. He never told me that they were from his room. Or so it was this whole complicit thing of the, yeah, dad letting me lie and this kid. And it's all, I think for me, all of those things combined is what makes it, the whole thing, so hard.
Yeah, and there must be quite a lot of resentment around that as well.
Yeah, I think it just makes me angry that no one ever gave me the space to talk about it. Nobody ever, yeah, took I mean, if that was my daughter, I'd take her aside on her own and be like, babe, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
not in front of like a whole 4 or 5 people.
Humiliating.
And be like, you're disgusting, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of those things make me cross.
So did you actually tell anyone at the time?
No.
No one? You didn't confide in any friends or anyone?
No.
Because it was, you felt like it was too shameful?
I think at the time I didn't. When you've got someone who's been really horrible to you a lot of the time, when the abuse started, he was really nice to me.
Yeah.
So for me, I wasn't being bullied. I wasn't being made to steal stuff. He wasn't being horrible to me then. He was actually probably the nicest he was. So I think I was okay with that in a weird way.
Mm.
It was only after his friend, I mean, this poor kid's probably grown up to be this really lovely person, but this person knew that like one sentence literally broke me.
Yeah.
That was like almost the word, that for me was like, this is real now. Somebody else has just validated all the things that I kind of knew I probably shouldn't be doing or didn't feel right. It's really hard. It's all so tangled up. And I think that's why I've always found it really hard to, like, I've wanted to apologise and go, oh, I'm really sorry, like, I don't, make, like, was I abused? Like, I mean, I know I was, but it's probably not as bad as other people. It's this weird state that you live in where, and that I think, with especially when it's a child that does it to you, that you kind of, am I allowed to say this,
yeah,
is abuse?
You don't know what to think. It's, yeah, so difficult to untangle, yeah, isn't it?
So that was my...
And here, it sounds... Thank you so much for sharing with us.
All right, now I've said it.
You can breathe.
I think, Gabriel, maybe at this point, I'd just like to touch upon, you know, how child-on-child abuse is prolific, isn't it? It's growing. Reports of it are growing. So it's so important that Sarah's story has been shared this morning.
Absolutely. And first of all, Sarah, thank you. Your bravery in coming forward to speak is immense. And there are so many points to what you've said that that really will resonate with many listeners out there. And you're absolutely right as well. Child-on-child abuse is growing and only getting worse. And interesting, and Sarah was saying about porn magazines with the rise of the internet and children younger and younger accessing porn and the imagery. Yeah, it's just it's growing hugely. One of the things that really resonated with me from Sarah's story was what you're saying about, she was saying about the untangling the web of confusion, which funnily enough is one of the names of one of the booklets that NAPAC has produced, because what you're saying is so true. What we hear on our telephone support line that NAPAC runs, I'll speak about that in a moment, but what we hear from the callers to our support line so often is a similar thing. I thought I was the only one this happened to, or this is not the right kind of abuse. It's not. People struggle with it hugely, absolutely hugely, hugely. So to hear it said out loud, and I think you will reach people, and every time someone speaks out, that will reach people, and that will start to chip away at that wall of, I thought I was the only one.
Also, I can imagine that there will be quite a lot of people out there who don't even realise they've been abused. You know, it's so, sometimes it's so insidious and so, it's like a seduction almost, that you don't actually realise that you are being or have been abused.
Yeah, then, and again, what Sarah was saying very powerfully about the complicity, about being made, the victim of abuse, being made to feel complicit in the abuse. And despite your abuser, Sarah, being a child, he displayed classic hallmarks of grooming. Yeah. The grooming part was the being
Nat
nice
just said
to
the
you.
Word the seduction. And yes, actually, that word is equals grooming this scenario.
It does. I mean, the buying the magazines, buying the sweets, being nice to you, etc. And then the fear and twisting the screws like that. Oh, wow, it's classic hallmarks.
Yeah. It was funny actually. I used to teach, and we had quite a few times where we'd have child protection come in and talk to us, the teachers, about things. And the first one I ever did when they were talking about grooming was, I literally burst into tears after this meeting and had to walk out because I'd never realised that's what had happened to me.
Yeah.
It's really, you just don't know, I think. And when you're so young, it takes you years to work out, how things have happened.
But when you're young, you're in the moment, you are the pure example of mindfulness, because you are literally in that second. You don't, you're not thinking about, you know, tomorrow's problems or yesterday's worries. You're in the moment. So it's only, as per what you said, you know, it's only 15 years on, you go, oh, that's what that behaviour was.
I think that's what really, on a personal note, bothers me a lot. When I hear people say, I speak at many conferences, I go to events, etc., I speak to people, well, why didn't they just tell someone?
Yeah.
Why didn't the child just report the abuse? And I have to stop myself from rolling my eyes, as if that was that easy, as if it was a skinned knee or someone taking a lolly from her. This is ridiculous, because what that question equates to is you're expecting that child who is in this moment of abuse, who has been groomed, who has been made to feel complicit, who is scared, who is frightened, who feels guilty and shame, you're expecting them to act like an adult would. You're expecting like you yourself, I'd report in that situation. Would you?
You just don't
would
know.
Would you really?
No.
No, you
no
don't.
No one knows until you have been in those shoes.
Yeah. No one should be expecting a child to report. They should be, exactly what Sarah was saying, adults have that responsibility to ask, to seek out, to ask the question, no matter how uncomfortable it is.
Thank you. So, Nina, I'm going to come on to you. How are you feeling? I know you're extremely nervous about this, but are you feeling okay? Are you okay for me to talk and ask you questions?
Yes.
Okay. Take a deep breath. And if you can, in your own words, tell us as much as you want to tell us about what happened to you.
Okay. So, my abuse was from my step-grandfather. That, I don't know if you could understand that. My step-grandfather.
Okay.
I don't even know how old I was, actually. I can't remember. I was really young. It happened for years.
Take your time. There's no rush.
So, I don't know if it was just me. I don't believe it was. I don't obviously want to bring the other person into this. But it was, I think it started like we would, you know, when you're a kid and you want to learn to drive.
Yeah.
I don't know. We did. And my grandparents lived on a farm and my grandma was my world.
Mm-hmm.
My step-grandfather was, you know, he was there from like when I was born. But my grandma was my world. Mm-hmm. But my grandpa would, you know, they would train dogs. They had black labs and they would train them. And we would go out in the trucks and take the dogs to train. And he would, it kind of started like he would be like, do you want to learn how to drive? And we'd be like, yeah, we want to learn how to drive, you know. So he would sit us on his lap, sit me on his lap. And it started like that. And then all of a sudden his hands would go down and started over top. And then slowly his hands would start moving underneath my pants and he would be fondling me. And I knew that it wasn't right. It never, you know, it felt uncomfortable always. And I would make an excuse to stop and to get out of that situation. And then it kind of moved to like bedtime. He would take us up to bed and lie down with us and kind of the same things would happen. So, and then he would put our hands to touch him. I've kind of blocked a lot of it out. Like it's not something you want to think about. Until the other day I was like, no, he never went under my pants. And then I was like, no, he did. But
it must be hard sometimes to remember or know what is a memory or what is, you know, it's really difficult when you're a child and so young to, you know, remember accurately or, you know.
Yeah, you never talk about it out loud, the details, you know. Like I've, in time, opened up to the odd friend over the years and just, you know, very blasé, like, yeah, I was abused. That's it. Like you don't go into detail because you don't want to. Like it's not a pleasant thing to relive.
No.
We were sent there for summers. We would spend the summers, we would spend weekends. We were always sent to my grandparents and I never wanted to, but we did for years up until I remember maybe 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. And then you start to have your own life, I suppose, and want to go with friends. And I would, you know, choose to go to my dad's more. And we did decide, I think I did, I decided to speak out. I think I was in grade 5 or
What's
6.
That? How old is that?
I think like 11.
Okay.
10, 11.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided it had stopped, but through this time too, it was kind of, I knew it wasn't right. And it was, you know, my grandma was always very much like, if anybody ever touches you, that's not right. You tell us, even if it's your stepdad, even if it's your dad, even if it's your, you know. And so in my head, I was like, is this a test?
Yeah.
I really didn't know.
Why was she saying that?
Yeah, like they were, I thought, is this a test? Am I supposed to? Nobody ever, he never said to me, don't say anything. It was just this unspoken thing that I knew I didn't like it. I knew that, but I also, I don't know, I didn't say anything because I loved my grandma so much. And then I really didn't know. I didn't know. In my head, I was like, is she testing me?
Mm.
So anyways, when we finally came out.
How did that happen?
I just, after school one day, I just sat my mom down and I said, like, this is what happened.
Wow.
And at first, my mom, I think, called my aunt right away. And my mom, Ed, had admitted that it had happened to her.
My goodness.
And my aunt
from
had admitted.
From the same person?
Yeah.
And your mom admitted it to you?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it became this, my mom called my grandma and they had them one day waiting at the house for us to confront them. Nobody else, just my grandparents, my mom, my aunt, and me. And I had to tell this person and to my grandma to their face exactly what happened.
Gosh. And confrontation.
Yeah. And then it became, they were making us, like, testing us. I don't know. It just became too much, I think, for my grandma. Right. She couldn't believe it. And she started asking us details. So basically, my...
Like quizzing you.
Quizzing us. Oh. Like, what truck was it? What color was the truck? My grandparents had a new truck every year.
Oh, my God.
I'm not good at car. I couldn't remember the trucks.
You were on the stand with your own family.
Yeah. So they started, like, accusing us of lying because we were making mistakes because we couldn't remember little details, basically. And they accused us of lying, and they would, this happened over like a few weeks. Every day we'd come home and this would be the case. And eventually, and then at that point, my mom and my aunt couldn't say that to my mom that it had happened to them. They told me that day, but they didn't make it about them. They made it about me.
Oh, what an incredible decision.
So eventually, they just kept accusing us of lying, basically. And it was funny because it was around April Fool's Day, and we couldn't take it anymore. We couldn't take it. They weren't calling, you know, people to help us. They were just accusing us of lying. So they just said, "You're lying." And we just said, "Yeah, we're lying." And then from that day forward, it became an April Fool's joke. That's what they named it as. Yeah. And we've never really talked about it again, basically. And there was, like, you know, kind of a rift between my grandma and me. But eventually it was just forgotten.
Like brushed under the carpet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yet your aunt and your mum were also in that decision to they wanted it to go. Did they? They just didn't want it. They didn't want it around.
I mean, you know, I can understand. I can understand. Not that I would make that same choice, but, like, as the person that it happens to, like, it's like you become blamed for ruining the family.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's not your fault. You are not, you know, you should have no shame or guilt, but it's... Somehow there's some responsibility that's put on that person for causing that.
Yeah.
Mm.
And for bringing it up because it is such a massive thing and can, like, break families apart.
Yeah.
So do you think your mummy and aunt, as survivors, used it as a coping mechanism to make it go away for their own personal experience?
I think that they obviously had to live with that lie their whole lives, and they couldn't deal with it, so it was easier to forget and to pretend it didn't happen. Then at that point, I also can see, like, what would have happened. We'd put him in jail, and then where does that leave my grandma? You know, like, it's not just him, like, we'd be ruining her life, and what did she do? You know, not that that makes anything any better. Obviously, we haven't helped anybody else in the future by doing that, and or my mom or my aunt or myself. But that was a choice they made, I guess.
Right. So we are going to play your track now. Just going to play a little bit of music to break up the show. So, Nina, what did you choose for us to play today?
Stormzy, Blinded by Your Grace.
I'm blinded by your grace.
Blinded by Your Grace by Stormzy. Gabrielle, following on from Nina's story, can we just talk about, there's a lot of education of not to communicate with strangers, stranger danger, you know, don't talk to someone you don't know. But so often, as per Nina's story, abuse is actually carried out by people that children know,
absolutely
family members.
Right. Yeah.
So can we just talk a little bit about that? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, people do think that people rely, I think, on this stranger danger because it puts it out there.
Yeah.
And if it's out there, then the family's safe and secure, that family unit. What we know, as per the stats you read out at the start of the show, but also from what we hear on our NAPAC telephone support line, which has been running for over 12 years now, we've spoken with over 40,000 adult survivors of childhood abuse, any kind of childhood abuse, be that sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse or neglect. And so we keep a lot of statistics and data on that. So just from our own data, 85% of the abuse that people talk about to us at NAPAC happen within the family environment.
Wow.
And that 85% statistic is replicated across studies that the NSPCC have done, that the Council of Europe have done. And I fully agree with what you were saying earlier about this is an underreported crime by huge amounts. So by far the greatest environment is around in the family. But Nina's, again, very powerful story is there's so much bound up on that. And what we hear from a lot of callers to our helpline is they feel almost split because in many cases, they actually love the person or at least like them or respect them, but they hate what they're doing to them.
Mm.
And so they feel split. And I always remember one of the callers who's at our helpline who said, I love my dad so much. I just hated how he made me feel, hated what he did to me. And they didn't want, and this thing about, an issue that comes up from what Nina was saying about whether you disclose and whether you report to authorities is the biggest fear. You will break the family up.
Because there's that guilt, isn't there?
Yeah.
And that's huge.
And it's a huge thing to put on a child.
Oh,
it's
God,
usually
yeah.
And it goes on the wider family too. And too often, as we hear from what Nina was saying, is that families will want to protect themselves. And that's the same thing that's replicated with institutional abuse too, which is going on to care homes and hospitals, etc., or the Catholic Church, which is being very big at the moment as well. Too often we see the reputation being more important to protect than actually safeguarding your children. So that's a theme that's replicated in many cases.
Maybe because the honest truth is just too difficult for them to even get their heads around.
Mm.
You know, they'd just rather push it away and pretend it didn't happen, make it into an April Fool's joke.
Absolutely. To diminish it, to package it away, to hide it. And I've been thinking about this for a while now. As a society, it is a really ugly truth that we don't treat our children well, that we don't protect our children, that we actually damage our children. And it's not the us and them scenario. It's within us all. I mean, I spoke to a conference last week, and there were about 150 people in the room, and I said, I don't want to scare anybody, but there's a good chance that four or five of you will have had lived experience of childhood abuse, and many, many more will know someone in your family or your friends' network who have. So it's not the out there, the stranger danger.
It's right next to us.
Absolutely, yes, it's within us. And
but
to confront it means confronting some very ugly, very difficult truths about what have you done to protect? What have you done to even ask the question? And that's very difficult, and doesn't make me popular at Christmas parties when I say these statistics.
Yeah.
But I have to sort of raise it out there.
So, you know, with reference to what you've just said, what have you done to protect your children?
Hmm.
What can we do to help children not experience these things? Like, are there safeguarding guidelines? How do you go about it? Well, it's such a big subject. So where do you start?
Mm. I think there are many guidelines, many sort of, and the NSPCC does some very good kind of for family resources. If you've got children now, head to the NSPCC's website about kind of advice about how you can talk to your children, or if you've got concerns about children, how to report, etc. Those things.
I've looked at the PANTS acronym,
PANTS,
which is a good one. It just reminds you. It gives you little pointers on how to talk to children about it, which is helpful, I think.
Really helpful. But I think even before that, the first step is having the awareness and having the self-awareness and the willingness, this is the most difficult one, the willingness to ask the question, yeah, or even admit to yourself the possibility that it could be happening. It could be happening within your family. It could be happening, you know, your parents might be perpetrating, your siblings, your cousins, etc. It's very ugly. I shy away from that. But I have to, if I'm going to be the chief exec of NAPAC, I have to ask that question myself, and I do. And I'm hyper aware of those things.
Sarah, so how about you? Because you're a mum, and how you must be hyper vigilant about this sort of thing. How do you stop yourself from going completely crazy?
I've got a friend who's been through a similar experience, and we call it the cogs of doom.
Yeah.
Basically, which is where your brain jumps from they're going for a sleepover to will they get sexually abused on that sleepover?
Yeah. You know, it jumps very quickly. Yeah.
And it's horrible, and it's really frightening. And I think
it's understandable, though, huh?
I think I had to take myself back to counselling when I had my daughter, because she got to about 4 years old, and you're talking about the pants thing, and
yeah,
I literally was trying to lay this enormous, terrifying foundation without trying to scare my child, but going way over the top. I mean, right. I got to a point where I had a place for her to hide in the house, and I had a code word to shout at her if something happened. Man. And I had to stop myself. My sister-in-law was like, Sarah,
this is too much.
This is not normal. You need to go and sort it out. So I went back to counselling for quite, not a huge amount of time, for maybe about 5 or 6 months. Worked through the whole thing again, because obviously I went to counselling, can't speak, sorry, when I was at university, but that was more about me and having my first relationships and how I felt about sex and all of those things.
Yeah.
That I had no idea how triggered I was going to be when I had a daughter.
Oh, yeah.
No idea.
I mean, the stuff you must have been telling her must have been all the things that you wanted as a child.
Yeah, I was getting to a point where it was like, I don't want to over-inform her. I don't want to freak her out. I don't want to terrify her. So I went back to counselling. I spent quite a lot of time working on that and talking about learned behaviours, talking about how I'd become so comfortable in the fact that I expected awful things to happen. I have a natural expectation that the worst is going to happen, and being terrified of being happy. Really scared about being happy, because if I'm happy, then something awful is going to happen, which I'm still working on at the moment, allowing myself to be happy, allowing myself to feel worthy, and allowing myself to feel valued is my thing I'm doing at the moment. Went back to counselling. I felt like I really put a lot of stuff to bed. Then had a really weird, like, a year where I think mentally I'd put a lot of stuff to bed, but physically, my body, I was like I had this constant fight or flight feeling.
It was trauma.
And so even though I'd sorted my mind out, I started having panic attacks.
Yeah.
I started suffering from migraines. I ended up going on like a weird migraine tablet that I think they used to give to people for depression, amitriptyline or something, I can't remember what it's called. And I just went, my body went mad for like a year. It was awful. I kept, I had to wear glasses. So I kind of, I worked through my mind, then my body went mad, and then I had to go and work through all these, like, so I had to sort of learn how to stop myself from having panic attacks. That was all cool. Got to about Scarlet 10-6. I've been working on myself for a couple of years. Got to a comfortable phase. Then my daughter turned 8. So for the whole year she was 8, I was like a crazy person.
Yeah, freaking out.
If I can just get her past being eight, then everything will be okay.
Yeah.
So from like the second she had her birthday to the second she turned 9, I was like, and she went on a residential. We were talking about this
earlier. That must
earlier.
Be difficult.
And I was like, I can't not let her go, because otherwise I'm not going to let her do stuff for the whole of her life, and I can't start with not letting her do stuff. So I had to go into school. I didn't have to. I went into school. I spoke to their mistress. I told her my story. I was like, what are you going to do? I'm worried about adults. I'm worried about kids. You're taking her to a...
How are you going
to
safeguard my child?
Yeah, you're taking her to a camp where she's going to be in a barn, essentially, a wooden hut with 4 other children. There's no locks on the door. There's no adult in there. What the hell's going to happen? So she went, and as she was leaving in the coach, there was like a 3-night stay. And she had a wonderful time. It was amazing. she went, and I must have looked like the craziest batshit crazy parent in the world, because as the coach left and everyone's like, bye, I lost my shit.
Oh, no.
I dissolved into this horrendous weeping, snotty, and all the parents who were lovely at our school, really nice, but like giving me the side eye of like, she's only going camping for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, I've just sent her off to like Fortnite, like Battle Royale. Oh. You know, she's gonna die. It's gonna be awful.
But hearing your story, all of those
horrible
parents would have completely empathised with your reaction.
I mean, it's difficult. I just want to say there's one thing, because I think a lot of the time you don't want to talk about it all the time, because it's permeated so much of who you are. On 100 Vaginas the other day, that I was watching it, and the lady said, I don't know who I would have been if this hadn't happened to me. So you spend your whole life wondering if you're the person you would have been, or if you're a different person, and it's so integrated that to try and move yourself out of that, to try and become a different person who's bigger, I mean, that's what I'm trying to work on at the moment. It's been the monster in the room, and I want to be the monster in the room over it. I want to make myself, I want to take up all the space.
Yeah.
I want to be the bigger thing in my life, so that if it's just like a little mold spot in the corner of the room, it's there, and it'll always be there, but I can stick something in front of it and look at it every now and then. But I need to make myself bigger than it, and I think that's really hard, and you have to work on it, but it's little things that throw you out with kids that every now and then it just suddenly goes woo-doof, and all of a sudden you're like trapped in the corner again. And
but
you know,
by you being on this show and talking so beautifully, same as Nina, you are far bigger than it, you know.
So Nina, you've spoken on your Instagram about being
Can you survivor. Share your Instagram account, actually? Just can we take that moment just to
Yes, my Instagram is Love Lashes and Fashion.
So you have spoken about being a survivor of sexual abuse on your Instagram. You've only touched on it, you haven't gone into huge amounts of detail, but one of the things that you said is how it's affected your body image and how it's affected your self-esteem. I just wonder if you can tell us about a bit more about how it's affected you as an adult now.
I feel like I'm at a point now, finally, in my life where I actually am starting to come out. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I'm in a good place finally with my body, but it's taken me so many years, and I didn't really think about it and I didn't have intentions to write it on my Instagram, except I posted a bathing suit shot, basically, and it was so hard for me to post, and I don't know why. You know, at this point I feel happy with my body, having 2 kids, but I was like, why was that so hard for me to post? And in my head I was like, I don't want to get the wrong attention. Somebody was like, oh, you'll get lots of followers, and I was like, I don't want dirty man followers. That's in my head. And then I thought, why do I feel that way? And then it was like a light bulb moment, like, from when I was young, from when this happened, I spent my whole childhood, my whole teen years covering up my body, like hiding any sort of any sexuality to bring me that kind of attention. I suppose so that it didn't happen again, to make me feel the shame and everything. And people would say to me like, oh, you know, like even I would always wear long tops, just anything to cover myself. You have a nice bum. Why don't you show it? And I'd be like, oh, no, I don't want to show it. You know, like that's going to bring people the wrong attention to
me.
So
you're so aware of this male gaze that you didn't want them to be looking at you in a sexual way.
Yeah.
Have you had therapy? Have you talked to someone in later years?
No, I haven't. It's just something like I've kind of briefly, you know, been speaking to my friends and been like, oh yeah, this, you know, this happened, but with no detail. It's only now that I'm rethinking about it, and I think with having kids, you know, it's made me so paranoid.
Has it? Is it like Sarah said? Yeah. Do you relate to that?
Yeah, I'm like, I just, my son is 9 and my daughter's 4. And probably more so since I had my daughter, although I know it happens with boys.
Yeah.
just because that's not my experience.
Mm.
I'm really paranoid with him, and he's never been on a sleepover. And, you know, we don't have any family here, so we don't go on date nights, period. Mm. Because there is no way that I would hire a stranger babysitter to watch my child. Because actually a scenario happened to me with a male babysitter when I was younger too, where
right.
he was trying to make us touch his penis. And so
you're
I'm
hyper
just,
aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not
yeah,
going
to put. And I don't know how to find that balance, actually. Like, when will I be able to let him go?
I don't think you necessarily, I don't think you should have to. I think I'm yeah. the same. I have all the fabulous baby sitter apps now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're having a laugh. There's yeah. no way.
Yeah.
I don't care how monitored they are, unless it's my mum or it's a daughter friend of somebody we know who's a really close friend of the family. No way am I going to let someone come into my house. I mean, I always think it's amazing. I think wonderful. And I love, it's wonderful that people haven't been through what we've been through. And so they don't. There's just something in my brain that's like 70 million alarm bells going off. And there's not a hope in hell of anyone who I don't really know looking after my kid or taking my kid anywhere. And that's the hard thing, is finding that balance between that. I was talking to my friend about again, that how much of my behaviour is normal mum behaviour and how much of it is mum behaviour because of what's happened to me, because I have no clue
yeah,
when
be
I'm being
hard.
Normal and when I'm being nuts.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, we're all nuts sometimes.
Yeah,
but that must be really difficult because you just don't know, do you?
Yeah.
And I can be quite hyper aware as well. I'm the same, but for different reasons of not allowing my daughter to go on, you know, sleepovers and stuff. So it's really difficult to know how you would parent if this hadn't happened to you.
Gabrielle, can you tell us a bit about what NAPAC does? I mean, I can see that you answered, there were 90,000 attempted calls to NAPAC last year, which is a stark figure. So can you just tell us a bit about the work you do to our lovely listeners?
Yeah, so NAPAC is the National Association for People Abused in Childhood. We're a national charity. We operate across the UK. And our mission is to really, is twofold. A, to supply some direct support to adult survivors of abuse. And B, to really sort of do advocacy, to raise awareness around this issue. We offer training to professionals, for instance, to help with the disclosure, because we know that many survivors, if they talk to their GP or even talk to a counsellor or therapist, or if they try to report to the police, have often had a very negative reaction, which can be terrible if you've built up the courage to disclose for the first time. So we try and break down those barriers. We do research based on our data set and so forth.
I came across your website because I found that you gave advice to people in the media and how to talk about childhood sexual abuse. And I found that really important. Could you just tell us a little bit about the language that you should and shouldn't be using?
Yeah, it's so important. The media have a fantastic role to play in this, and I am a huge advocate for TV soaps, for instance, documentaries who highlight child abuse storylines, newspapers
in the right way,
yeah. Newspapers who report on it,
but they sensationalise it sometimes.
Absolutely,
and I don't like the titillation.
Oh God, oh. No, and that's important because language counts because it reaches so many people, and it can be triggering for a lot of people who some survivors and victims of abuse who will read something that resonates with them, but that says, oh, it's historical, it was a long time ago. That's one example, for instance.
Yes,
talking about childhood abuse that happened in the past, many of the media and reporters, journalists would say historical abuse. And that is a really diminishing way of describing it because, as we've heard so eloquently from Nina and from Sarah, this is not something that happened in the past and they've just shut the... You wouldn't
it
talk
lives
about
with
a,
you every day.
Absolutely. You wouldn't talk about a historical bank robbery or a historical assault. This is something that lives on. So we prefer the term non-recent because you have to differentiate of when it actually happened, but it takes away that sting.
Yeah.
Now, there's a really interesting debate going on about what do people call themselves? Are you a victim? Or are you a survivor? Now, there's no... And I interchange...
You say you survivor, don't you?
Well, survivor or victim, actually, because, and this is a big thing, people who've been through this will have different opinions on it.
Yeah.
Now, at NAPAC, I don't claim to speak for all victims of abuse, and neither does NAPAC as an organisation, because survivors of abuse are not a homogenous group. Mm. Everyone's got a very different experience, everyone's got a very different view. And I mean, just one look into our Twitter feed, for instance, and you'll see that, you know, people, some people aren't very happy with what we do, etc. Some people like the term victim and will say it, these just to describe themselves.
Yeah.
Others say no, because that puts me in the passive role. I'm a survivor, and that's great. There's a reason that we kind of keep having to use victim, and because it's tied into the legal right. processes, etc. So that's why we kind of
that
use
makes
it.
Sense.
Others mm-hmm. hate the words victim and survivor, and will say I'm a thriver. And that's great as well. Basically, it's up to you, really, as long as it's context appropriate and you're giving people the power to describe themselves. But just a word about that you mentioned earlier about the demand that NAPAC faces and about, you know, so we have a telephone support line.
Yeah,
I just want to mention that number now. It's 0808 801 0331.
Absolutely. Please, and this could be the first step. This could be the first step in your journey to, if you're ready to pick up that phone. We don't offer a counselling or ongoing support service, ongoing therapeutic service. What we offer is a supportive space, a listening space. And so because of the demand, we have to put calls at 30, limit calls to 30 minutes each. But that means, and if you ring up, and if you want to cry for 20 minutes in a safe space, you can do that.
So I know that you're trying to expand your services as well, and that's really important to you guys, so you can just help you can reach more people and support them. What can we do to help NAPAC?
That's really, really good question, really nice question to ask too. So we are not standing still. We are going out to seek funding from government, who have been generous to us over the years, and we're putting in another bid for the next year. Various trusts and funds have been supportive to us as well. But
is there a donation?
If the general public want to go out, what can they do? There is a page on the NAPAC website, and it's fundraising. So it's there right across the top.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of ideas if you want to do fundraising yourself for NAPAC, and we've had some amazing. So these what we call ad hoc donations, because from individual giving, have been amazingly generous over the years, and that does really help. And everyone's great. One special shout out to one of our supporters, who Jessica Standley, who is running 10 marathons. And she to raise funds for NAPAC, and she's
oh my
just been
God.
Brilliant. So I'm not saying everyone go out and run 10 marathons by any means.
If I could, I would.
I couldn't run half of one. But if you feel like doing something, we've got some ideas on our website. And even just the other thing too, our website has resources on it, because our support line has so much demand. People may not get through the first time. If you can't get through, keep trying. You will get through. But go to our website. There's a page that's Survivors. And we've got a lot of booklets there, six booklets in particular.
Can you give us the URL, please?
Yeah, it's www.napac.org.
Just spell NAPAC. That's
NAPAC. So napac.org.uk. Mm. And those booklets could be, I think, they get a lot of hits, so many hits. And
they're really good, actually.
One of the things that's new, I spoke about earlier when listening to Sarah's experience, untangling the web of confusion touches on a lot of the issues that Sarah raised there. Was it really abuse? You know, all those questions. Mm. It could, and we have advice on dealing with flashbacks, for instance. All the things that we've learned over the years from listening to our callers, our supporters, and our survivors and victims who call us, we turn that into a resource that can help others. It's what we try and do.
Powerful work. I also just want to shout out to the incredible work of Childline also, and also to the NSPCC and the SurvivorsTrust.org. They have over 130 organisations based in the UK and Ireland, which provides specialist support for women, men and children who have survived rape, sexual violence or other sexual abuse.
We can put this all in the show notes as well, so that you can go to those and get support if you need them.
Thank you so much, Sarah, Nina and Gabriel, for sharing your time and your stories with us. We are going to finish on Sarah's track choice, which is Fuck All the Perfect People.
I was going to say, if anybody wanted to DM me about or chat to me about stuff, I'm on Sasanyosh on Instagram.
How do you spell that?
That's S-A-S and Yosh, Y-O-S-H.
And Nina.
Nina, give us your Insta again.
Yes, please feel free to message me. Also, Love Lashes and Fashion.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for coming. I just think, you know, it's such a difficult topic to talk about, but it's going to help so many people listening to this just to know that they're not alone, I think, is the most important thing. And you have done something incredibly brave today, because I know it wasn't easy for you at all. And I just hope that you feel like it was a good experience to share what you've been through. Not good experience, but you know,
yeah.
It was worthwhile.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you. To be or not to be.